Welcome to the Confidence for Rockstar Marketers podcast. I'm Anna Iverson, a story-driven copywriter who helps you turn your stories into compelling marketing campaigns that generate obsessed megafans, not just one-off transactions.
And I'm Helen Walker, a no-fluff mindset coach who helps you throw away the beliefs that are holding you back, so you have the confidence to make your most audacious entrepreneurial dreams a reality.
On this show, we'll introduce you to the latest marketing strategies from cutting-edge industry experts, and we'll teach you how to overcome your demons so you can implement these strategies in your business right away.
If you're looking for straight-talking, no-fluff advice you can put into action right away, stick around and let's dive into the show.
A lot of our entrepreneurial family are corporate refugees, outcasts even. It's why we work so well on our own. But the search for authenticity in life and in business can be a slippery one. It can feel elusive, and many of us struggle to develop enough self-knowledge to feel 100% comfortable putting the real us out into the world.
Which is why we're super excited to welcome Amanda Grace onto the show. Amanda combines Rockstar Rebellion with an inspiring mission to help women look beyond the need to fix themselves. She uses a process of creative journaling to help women find the path to becoming unapologetically true to who they really are. Amanda also has one of the most loyal and engaged social media followings I've ever seen. Her audience absolutely love her, so she's definitely worth checking out if you want to see someone who's crushing their small but perfectly formed audience building campaign. So Amanda, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Anna and Helen. Delighted to be here as always.
Okay, so you give yourself the super intriguing title of spiritual guide. Mm-hmm. Can you share with us what it means to you to be a spiritual guide and how you came to use art and creativity as a vehicle to guide your clients?
Sure, of course. So spiritual guide is one of the things. I mean, you could ask me on a Monday what I, what would you call yourself and I'd say that. And the next day I'll tell you, something else. So I love the metaphor pilgrim most of all. That is my archetype, right? What I do is spiritual guidance. How I do it is more through soul companionship and accompaniment. So I accompany people on their spiritual journeys is what I would see my role has evolved into, let's say, from facilitator to actual soul companion now. And what that really means, like what the journey is, what a spiritual journey really is to develop, identify, establish, and also then to nurture a relationship with that which is sacred to you in life. And that is quite the journey just to even identify that, because so many of us, and especially women, are taught what should be sacred to us, what should be important to us, what we should be giving our time to. And it's not always the case that that is our true desire. You know, it's more kind of role-based and societal, cultural or norms and ideals-based, very conforming, very restricting. And so, and we ultimately become incongruent with our true selves, and that is where all the distress then comes from. So that is, let's say, the spiritual journey side of things. How I go about doing it is that I provide journaling, coaching, and community, those three things, as a way of, opening the doorway through which we can discover these things and explore these things and find out for ourselves what does matter to us and what doesn't matter to us, and what we thought should have and why, and all of those things. It just to clarify, so that we, it's good to know, the difference between things we do because we think we have to and things we do because we want to.
And do you think nowadays, because we're all we're all so disconnected with our reliance on technology, and I suppose in a way the fact that people no longer go to church and all that kind of thing. Do you think that people are really missing the spiritual side of their lives? And I know one of my friends, I have a couple of friends who are GPs, and they say that a lot of their patients are actually people that just want someone to talk to because they don't have that anymore. Whereas you used to go to church and you'd maybe speak to the priest if you had something that you couldn't discuss with the people around you. Do you think that's something that you're almost stepping into that void in your own unique way? Because people are missing that.
I absolutely do. In my own experience, it is true. And I'm seeing more and more in the experience of my clients that it is true. It is, you know, it has been an unfortunate thing over the years that spirituality and religion have become conflated. And that religion has, and the dogmatic structures and institutions that kind of like own religion have all but snuffled out any light for anybody looking for a spiritual path to walk on. And all of the things, I mean, so the whole thing about spirituality is, you know, having a way to develop that relationship between you and the thing. And I don't mean thing as in it's a singular thing, but you and that which is sacred, right? That is the thing between which the relationship has to be developed. And the spirituality is how the relationship is developed. That is the walk, the things that you do on an everyday basis that feeds that relationship. And like it really is so missing. And the anonymity of online community, it's online community has been amazing for me. But there is this kind of like not knowing who your neighbor is and not, you know, this kind of like miss that gap. Exactly everything you said, Anna. Those very, very important roles, we're social creatures. And we need to be in relationship with our environment in a very specific way that will meet the needs of a person's soul, which really and truly is what animates you, you know.
Wow, I feel like I've got a million questions to ask you now. what would you say then is the number one issue that clients face when they come to you looking for that support?
Okay. The number one issue that most people would say when I ask, nearly everybody will say time. Time's just a thing, you know, I just don't have time for me. I don't have time for that kind of thing. So that's on the very, very surface, let's say, that is the issue. It's like the issue is I'm dissatisfied and I want to do something about it. But the things that I reckon will help me get there are things that I've learned that I can't give time to. And so this story develops around never having time to art, never having time to meditate, never having time to look after myself because there's everything else that comes before me. I would also say exhaustion is an issue. It's just like they're just so completely exhausted and running on adrenaline. And then the other thing is this kind of like compulsive need to fix, you know, this constant buying into the promise that if they just fix this thing, well, then life will be different, you know. And it's not true.
I think people are looking for something outside themselves to help sort of tape over the problem. So are there any external symptoms that you'd look out for in somebody that should come to you for support?
Yeah, I love how you framed that question there. You know, it's about something being outside of themselves. So do we look outside of ourselves for answers? Yeah, absolutely. And for solutions, we're always looking outside. You know, like that it is, you know, if I just go on this diet, if I just buy this thing, if I just get that hairstyle, all of that stuff. When, you know, here's the bad news or the sad news is no, it won't. None of it is going to change anything. You know, it might make you feel better temporarily and it can make you feel better and there's nothing wrong with feeling better. But this is all about, you know, the work. It's an inside job. The work has to be done on the inside. But on the outside, what you're asking, Anna, is it the symptoms Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so almost how would, when a client comes to you, or if somebody was thinking that maybe they do need your support, what would they look out for in their own behaviour or in the ways that they're trying to, as you say, fix themselves? What are your clients typically doing to try to fix themselves?
Okay, so generally my clients are a good bit down this road. So they would be already downstream with this, and they would already be kind of grappling and struggling for a while. So this, a lot of my clients are in recovery. They have chosen sobriety as a way of life. They've just kind of gotten tired of the numbing. So there would be a lot of numbing kind of behaviors. There'd be a lot of incessant scrolling on social media. There might be a lot of, you know, TV watching, Netflix watching, you know, like this, the constant numbing to put off the next thing that you have to do in life. Excess, you know, this kind of like compulsive dieting. I think I just mentioned that. It could be drinking. It could be, most women will think that, you know, that binging, and I'm using bunny quotes when I say these words, that binging, comfort eating, emotional eating, most women will think that that is a problem. So that they might be doing that, and they'll think that the answer is to stop doing that. But that would be one of the symptoms. But that is a symptom of dieting, which is a different conversation. But I just needed to say that because it's just important for me to not pathologize any of the behaviors. But so things like that, you might also find just a general kind of apathy in life, feelings of anger, fear, hopelessness, depression, anxiety, and not really knowing what to do with any of them. You know, just a lot of questioning the meaning of life, questioning, doubting, and just seeking, a lot of seeking, you know.
I think what really resonates with me is what you said about that need to fix. And that definitely used to be me, that, like you say, that you've just got to fix it. You know, once you fix that, or once you do that, then everything else will be better. And then you get to that point, you're like, oh, right, that's not what I thought would happen. Mm-hmm. Does your desire to support your clients in the way that you do come from the fact that you've shared similar experiences in your own life?
God, no, I'd know nothing about anything like that. I never tried to fix myself. absolutely. I had, when I was, it's 10 years ago now, actually, this year, or maybe it was last year, but I'm just coming up on 10 years since what I call my crisis of wrongness. So I had always lived my life from the outside in. I was always, you know, kind of wondering, am I okay with you? Are you okay with me? What do you think of me? Am I doing this okay? You know, everything was that. And it was a constant just like looking for approval, and also needing just being very worried about other people's feelings and thoughts about me, and thoughts about me and feelings around me. So very much living from the outside in. A lot of doing things because I should have. And it felt to me like it ultimately led me into therapy, because when you live your life from the outside in, what you discover is there is a crisis of wrongness. And what I discovered was that I was in the wrong for me marriage, in the wrong for me job, in the wrong for me house, in the wrong for me community, in the wrong for me, everything was wrong for me. And you know, when I got into therapy and I had this complete crisis, I didn't even know who I wanted. I didn't even know what I wanted. Like if I stayed over in your house, Helen, let's say, and you know, the next morning get up and you're like, hey, what do you want for breakfast? Do you want your toast toasted, or you want your bread toasted? I'd be like, because I wouldn't even know from where within to draw that answer from. I did not know, did I want my bread toasted or not? I didn't know. My big concern was, would it anger you if I asked for you to toast my bread?
I know what you mean. I really know what you mean. I think this is so common with so many women.
Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't know if I wanted toast. I just wanted to know what was most convenient for you so that you wouldn't get angry with me.
For I know exactly what you mean.
So for you, in sort of overcoming that, what's been the greatest practice that you've brought into your day-to-day life that's helped you overcome that, so that you can start to actually, when someone asks you a question, you can give them the real answer and tell them what you actually want, rather than trying to second guess what they want?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the core practice is inquiry. And that is a process of, contemplating questions that, contemplating like what things mean for you. So inquiry is just like asking questions and giving good thought to them, but not just on your own. You know, so this is not the kind of questions that you ask with you looking for an answer with your head. So self-inquiry is by far like learning how to question my own beliefs, basically, has been by far the most helpful practice. But it doesn't happen in a vacuum. So self-inquiry within community is magical. And then self-inquiry within community that has, like the coaching element to it. And then also the practice of journaling as the vehicle in which we do this inquiry. So it kind of like it turns this inquiry into this very profound thing, because we're very much conditioned to be analytic, logic, reason-based, head-chasing characters. So, trying to answer a question from the same place that asked, like trying to answer a question with your head, with your mind is brainwashed, So trying to answer a question with just your mental faculties is you're trying to skate Anna with one skate. I don't know if that's hard, but I'm sure it is. Like, I can't skate with two, so one skate, it would be really hard. But when you bring journaling into it, because this is visual journaling and we use a lot of symbolism and imagery in that, it opens you up to the power of your imagination and your inherent propheticness. So you do know, there are things that you do know, but they have been buried. They've been buried underneath all this logic and all this reason. And so journaling bypasses that. So we have this holy trinity of journaling, coaching, and community, in which creates the environment, the perfect environment for inquiry.
And do you think it's something that people could feasibly do on their own, or does it really involve all three elements that you've just said, the coaching, the journaling, and the community? Do you think all three elements are as important as each other to make this a real success for people?
I do, actually, because if you think about it, like if I was to sit at home with inquiry, you can certainly do it on your own, but without the witnessing, there isn't any, mirroring happening and empathizing happening. So the witnessing has to happen. You have to be able to risk, that the idea, and also community, like Facebook is a community. Can you imagine just being on Main Street Facebook doing this work? No, it has to be specific community, intentional community. So, and then with the coaching piece is to have somebody who will, like, it's kind of like somebody who can see from outside and who has the skills to direct your inquiry, to help you kind of direct your inquiry or see, maybe just flag a few things for you and help you go deeper with it. For me, it is the most potent combination to have those three things, yeah.
I think journaling, though, I journal and I tell my clients to journal, and it is so amazing, like, how powerful it is when all of this stuff just comes out of your head that you didn't even know was in there.
Mm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It is, yeah. It's very surprising. We're just like, whoa, I did not even know that I was carrying that around.
Mm.
Yeah. And so the journaling... I presume, Helen, that it's written journaling that you're talking about, is it?
I do written journaling just purely because I've seen your stuff on Instagram and it's amazing. And if I draw, I'm just really disappointed with it.
But I don't draw either. And we always start with writing.
But it just looks so good. Like, it, visually, it just looks amazing. When I do stuff, it looks like my 2-year-old's done it.
Which is amazing. I have kids' things hanging up here. Yeah, I guess what you're seeing on my feed is the pages that have been worked on, you know? I teach that process. I teach how to get there, and it actually is surprisingly simple. Like, once you know, there's no drawing. I don't teach drawing at all.
I think I just love it. I could go through your Instagram account for hours and just look. It's just so calming.
Oh, good. Thank you.
No, it's lovely.
You're obviously not reading my captions.
I don't have time to read.
I'm joking.
No, I do. Now, I've suffered with mental health, and I know, a lot of people with mental health challenges are looking for a way to, in inverted commas, fix themselves. Now, I know you don't like that term fix when it comes to helping your clients. Why is that?
Yeah. So I think because, okay, so I think that it is detrimental. For a start, the whole mental health model, let's say, is all about pathology. It's all about what's wrong with you, you know, and how to right it. So it's a mental model addressing what very often can be rooted in, it's a psycho-spiritual thing. It also can be biological. Like, there's a whole person here, you know? And so to think that, okay, so here's what I usually tell my students, right? So we go through life in terms of, with an attitude kind of like, and a culture of sin and penance. So you have this sin, and it's almost like your mental health or whatever it is that's the symptomatic. It's almost like, you know, rooted in sin, and then the penance is having to make up for it. You know, like having to do better, get better. There's so much pressure on people to get better and to be well and to have this. Like, I think it's a complete myth that anybody could be 100% okay in this. I don't know if you curse in your podcast, so I won't, but just imagine me cursing.
We do.
Well, in this fucking shit show that's going on right now, like, if you're not depressed, there's something wrong with you.
I agree.
Okay, so, and if you're not anxious, well, then why are you not anxious? Are you not paying attention? Like, it's very appropriate a response very often to have anxiety, to doubt, to despair. It's very appropriate. So trying to fix that or make that a go away, trying to fix your, you know, issues with time instead of figuring out, like, why do you have issues with time? Trying to fix your relationship with food instead of asking, what is it about food and your body that has you, you know, trying to shrink it? What's that about? So this whole idea of healing is about getting past the idea that you can be free of your wounds, right? So we move from the idea of sin and penance to wound and healing. And it is not to be free of your wounds and get rid of them, but it is to understand how they are informing our choices and our decisions in life.
And I suppose when you think about the term fix, if I think back to my own experiences when I suffered with mental health problems, you know, going back to what we first started talking about was finding that, you know, when you find that solution, you'll be fixed and everything will be better. And actually that term fix implies that, you know, you're somehow broken or, you know, you're not how you should be. And I was searching for a fix, a solution. What could take this pain away? Mm. And actually, I wasn't broken. I just didn't understand my thoughts enough. I just didn't understand how my mind was working, and it was taking over.
Yes, yeah. And there's so much isolation and judgment. It's very scary. It's very, very scary to be in pain and to not have holding around that pain. Very, very scary. And actually, I broke something here the other day. It's this little ramekin dish that has a handle, and I use it, you know, to poach my eggs. And it's my little pet toy. I love this little ramekin, and I dropped it the other day and I was like, ah. And so I put it aside and I was, you know, going to super glue it back together and blah, blah, blah. But as I was super gluing it back together, I dropped it again.
Oh, no.
Right. So suddenly I went from having two pieces to four. And then I was like, oh, Jesus. But I ended up throwing it in the bin because I, you know, I broke it beyond. And I was like, if that is not a metaphor for my life, I don't know what is. Like, so, but the idea also of
wabi sabi that shit.
No, I couldn't wabi sabi that shit.
My favorite ever expression that Amanda's used on her Instagram feed.
Yeah, just wabi sabi that shit. In this case, it didn't work. But what I was thinking at the same time was like, to fix something, it implies that the thing is in a fixed state to begin with. We're not in a fixed state to begin with. We're changing daily, and we have to learn how to roll with those waves and roll with those punches. And when you try and fix yourself, you're trying to put yourself together, back together in a way that, first of all, you probably never were. And second of all, like putting yourself back together again as if like, when I get this right, I'll never have to do it again.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, when you're, you know, a 13-year-old boy, it's like, but I showered on Monday. You know, yes, and you have to shower now again because it's now Friday. So it's not a one and done. There is no such thing as fixing. You can't fix it. We're not fixed by nature. We're fluid by nature.
And that would actually be really boring, wouldn't it, to be like, right, I'm fixed. This is me now for the next 30 years.
Yeah. And everybody probably knows somebody like that, and it is boring.
Maybe like a rubber doll or something.
It can be. It can be a little bit, you know, just, I don't know. There's a lot of security in it too. I know that people do, you know, I don't want to judge anybody, but some people do just do the Groundhog Day thing for their whole lives, and that's fine. Yeah.
That would be my absolute worst nightmare.
It wouldn't work for me either, but, you know.
To look back and just go, well, life was all right, but did I do anything extraordinary? No, but at least no one got hurt. That is my idea of an absolute nightmare existence. So you speak a lot about this idea of realness and rejecting the idea of being a good girl, in inverted commas. What do you think stops people from being real?
I think one thing, and it's losing something. So losing something that matters to them. And I think that thing is love, and everybody's idea of what love is different. For some people it's approval, for some people it's safety, for some people it's security, whatever it is, but they're afraid of losing that. Whatever love is for you, you're afraid, that's what we're afraid to lose.
I can remember my mum saying to me at school. So when I was at school, I was a total geek. I used to sit at the front of the classroom, like hand in the air, trying to answer all the questions. I'm sure you can probably totally picture that.
Nothing wrong with a geek. I was
But my mum always used to say to me, because I went to girls' school as well. So there was a lot of like bitching and all that kind of thing. And loads of childhood squabbles. So I used to come home from school probably three times a week, having had some kind of bust up with one of the girls in my class. And my mum always used to say to me, if they don't like you for who you are, they are not your friends. And I remember she used to say that to me all the time. So I kind of grew up with this attitude of, well, if you don't like me for who I am, you can bog off. Yeah. But I'm now realizing that that's quite an unusual attitude to have, and like it makes people dislike me in many cases, but it's just, it is what it is. And I really, really thank my mum for putting that into my head, that you don't have to do what everyone else wants in order for them to like you. And if you do have to do that for them to like you, then they are not the kind of people that you want in your world anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, good job, mammy.
Yeah, she is a badass, my mum.
Yeah.
God, the pressure to get it right now. You've got kids of your own.
I'm trying to drum the same idea into their head as well. When my eldest daughter, 7, and she often comes home from school having had a squabble with, she's got this friend who is apparently her best friend, and she's really horrible to her. Sometimes the stuff she comes out with, I'm horrified. And I keep saying to her, why are you even friends with this girl? She's not even nice to you. And I feel like it all comes from jealousy, but obviously that's because I think my daughter's the best thing since sliced bread. But there's just no need for like, the kind of catty comments that she's getting even at the age of seven. So I just keep saying to her, you be you. And if she doesn't like it, then you don't need her to be your friend. You've got hundreds of other friends. Just kick it to the curb.
Yeah, other people not liking you is actually their problem and not your problem. Like taking on the responsibility of making yourself likable so someone else doesn't have to be uncomfortable. Oh, fuck. That will land you in the hands up therapist chair at 34 years of age, not being able to speak because I was crying so hard.
Wow, this is very thought provoking, you guys. Now, you're always working on a ton of projects. What's been the biggest achievement in your business so far?
I think it's the fact that I, am here, that I'm doing things, that I have programs. So, but my biggest achievement in my business, I've actually just had my third round of my raw online workshop, my gateway workshop, and I had 162 participants, students.
Wow.
Yeah. And we're just coming to the end of that 4 weeks together now. And I also have like a 40. So I've just hit 200 students at one time. Like I currently have 200 active students in my spaces at the moment. And that's a really big achievement, to be able to hold space for that many people. But, actually, now that I think of it, I think if I was to really answer that question, my biggest achievement is that I have attracted to me people who actually are kind. My students, they look after each other, They are so, so kind to each other. So, rather than metrics of what I've achieved in terms of, money or people coming in or numbers, I think that's actually my biggest achievement, is that I have attracted the kind of people that I want to be around.
And that's actually a really big achievement, isn't it? Because so many people have, again, inverted commas, successful businesses, but they work with people they don't like.
Yeah, no, I was just saying it to my classroom the other day. I was just thanking them, actually. I was thanking them. I was just saying, thank you for looking out for each other the way you do. Thank you for making this space, respecting this space as one of healing and in which people can risk being brave. And that is, I think, just the consistency of authentic messaging that I've put out there, just because it has, you repel the people who aren't for you.
We've both been in communities where there's been a lot of sniping and backstabbing, and that comes from the top. So the leader of the community creates it by being that way themselves. So if you're putting out a message where you don't tolerate that, you make it clear that you don't tolerate that, that's not what you're about, then it draws in the right kind of people and the kind of people that you want to be around. And I know you said to me in the past that you've had trouble communicating your message, but clearly to me that's a sign that you're not having trouble communicating your messaging, because you are bringing in exactly the right people to create the kind of community that you would yourself choose to be in.
Yes, absolutely. My communities are my spaces and my community that are the thing that gives the most to me and to what I do. It really is. I think that's my biggest achievement.
So you have a really great story about a business disaster involving a 5-litre can of paint and a ton of traffic. Could you share that for our listeners?
Yeah. So my very first live workshop, my gateway workshop is called Raw. And the very first time I delivered Raw was in a yoga studio in quite a busy town here in Ireland, which I won't mention in case the police are listening. But I had arrived the night before to set up, which I like to do. And for some reason, I had brought with me a 5-litre can of paint because I don't ask me why I thought it was a good idea to bring it as one of the supplies. I was just thinking madness. But I couldn't get parked on the same side of the road as the studio. So I had to cross this very busy road. And it was there was no crossing point where I was parked. So it was a case. And I had one of those IKEA trolleys with me to carry in the boxes of supplies that I was bringing with me. And so there I was with my stuff stacked on the IKEA trolley and just like making my way across the road. And just as I arrived at the other side, the 5-litre can of paint just plop, bang, lid open onto Main Street. So I just stood there in total, like, I can't believe this is happening, kind of, you know, freeze. I was in total freeze mode, but there was traffic building either side of me. And I was in the middle of the traffic going in one of the directions. So they started beeping. I pulled the can of paint up, and then my mind was racing because I was like, I'll get cardboard. I'll put paper, you know, I was just like, how am I going to absorb this? And the cars just were too impatient. So they started to beep. And I just stepped up onto the side of the road, like if I was a dog, my tail would have been between my legs. And I was just despairingly watching as the first car just went through the puddle and then down the road. So I'm trying to do sound effects. And the second one and the third one. And they just, with their tires, drove through the paint and painted the fucking town white for as far as the eye could see. Just like a big roller all the way down the street. And the legs went out from under me. I was like, that's it. It's like, I'm going to be arrested. The council are going to fine me. I kept thinking this is going to cost me €1,000 and it's going to ruin me. And oh God, it was the worst thing. I was just so embarrassed and helpless.
Are you supposed to paint the town red? Isn't that what they say? Not white.
Yeah, white. I was so mortified. But you know what? The next morning, one of my students was lost and couldn't find the studio. And I said to her, where are you? And she says, I'm on Main Street, blah, blah, blah. I said, okay, you see the white trail of paint?
Just follow it.
Going up the street. She was like, yeah. I said, yeah, just follow it up to the splatter point and turn right. So it ended up, you know, being really easy the next day. I was just like able to direct people to the studio.
But that's a good laugh. In reframing, isn't it? Taking a negative and using it to your advantage.
Yeah, I was like, I should do this in every venue because it was really easy to just like, you know, say, okay, so directions, how to get there. Park on Main Street, follow paint.
Oh, God, if that had been me, I'd have just been got into my workshop and my head would have just been all over. How did you get your head back in the game?
Well, it was the night before, so I went back to, you know, where I was staying that night, and I just rocked myself for a while. But when I got up the next morning, I just, you know, all I was doing, I was just like, once I'm in here, nobody will know, you know, the kind of way, just don't look guilty kind of a thing. But then I laughed about it, you know, when the students came in, I told everybody about it. I was like, did you see my artwork on the street? And we had a good laugh about it, and that was it. But I was terrified, and I didn't share the photograph with anybody for 2 years.
Really?
I was terrified, yeah. So it was 2 years before I posted that photograph.
Oh, that's brilliant. I've just got this picture of you standing in the street and the police come in and like having white paint all over your shoes and them going, excuse me, have you done this? And you go, no, not me, no.
Well, me.
No. White paint? No, on my shoes. Don't know what that is.
So, yeah. Amanda, we've worked together to help you nail your message. And a lot of what you do really benefits from you showing rather than telling. So you use a lot of IGTV to demonstrate your creative journaling. And obviously, it's still really important to have a crystal clear message. But why do you think it's a challenge for people in similar niches to yours to defluff your messaging?
Oh dear, this fluff thing. why is it a challenge? I'm not really sure. For me, I find it very difficult to stay on the surface. You know, I'm a deep diver, so I'm always like 6, 7, 8 foot deeper than I need to be when I'm in the when I should be on the surface. Another reason is because I have the, you know, I'm very reluctant and resistant to do the pathologizing thing. Like, you know, have you, like name the problem. And then I'm also very reluctant to promise solutions because I don't offer solutions.
Amanda, at this point in the show, we like to end with a quick round of confidence rock stars. Would you rather?
Ooh.
Because, well, it's funny and also helps our listeners get to know you outside of our business, of your business, sorry, not our business, your business.
Okay.
So okay.
I'm literally having a panic attack because I'm just going back to the toast situation. Would you rather? I don't know. Okay, let's go for it.
We'll do it quick fire so you don't have time to
okay.
think.
Have fun.
Okay, so would you rather be stuck in the middle of a perpetual food fight or a never-ending water fight?
Oh, God, water. Water, maybe food, I don't know. But water.
Would you rather have everything you draw come to life but be really bad at drawing, or be able to fly but only as fast as you can walk?
Oh, flying.
Okay, the last one. Would you rather be the funniest person in the room or the most intelligent?
Oh, I'm both. No, joking. funny.
Hey, thanks so much for playing along with us. It's been super fun getting to know you, and I know our listeners will get a huge amount of value from this conversation.
Thank you very much. I actually am clenching my hand right now with the stress of those decisions. Those hypothetical.
We maybe should warn people that we're going to do it at the beginning.
No, that's my thing. I'm like, oh my God, I can't choose. When people say to me, what's your favorite song? I'm like, oh my God, I don't have a favorite thing.
And there's too many to choose one good song.
Exactly. I don't have favorite things.
And just before we wrap up, where is the best place for our listeners to find out more about you or dig a little deeper into what you do?
I would say the best place to come to me is Instagram. So I am pilgrimsoul.ie on Instagram. That's also my website is pilgrimsoul.ie. But if you come and check it out on Instagram, that's where I have all the, you know, I have lots of tutorials so you can actually see what I'm doing there and get involved if you want to. So that's pilgrimsoul.ie.
And it's well worth a look. It's absolutely brilliant. Amanda, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Helen. And thank you, Anna.
Well, thank you for coming on, and thank you also to our listeners for tuning into this week's episode. We hope you've enjoyed it as much as we did, and we look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you want to keep up to date with all our future episodes, don't forget to hit the subscribe button and make sure you leave us a 5-star review. Or share us with a friend that you think will benefit from our content.